coming up on Golf Today, Lydia Ko, a giant in our game, joins the program fresh off her 18th career LPGA win. We'll ask her about a shakeup to her team and her long-term goals at the age of 25. And we have an update to the rules of golf announced by the USGA and RNA. What does it mean for the pro game, for the amateur game, and for your game? And another trophy for the ageless, timeless Bernhard Langer. He went Hank Aaron on us, number 44, one behind the all-time record. Can he make history at the age of 65? Don't hate, appreciate on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
News on this Monday, we now know Tiger Woods will play at least once this fall. Tournament organizers announced today that Tiger will headline the latest installment of the match, teaming with Rory McIlroy to take on Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas at a 12-hole under the light showdown in Florida. The charity competition will be held at Pelican Golf Club in Bel Air, Florida. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week magazine, the 15-time major champ, set to play some golf.
What was looking like winter suddenly looking like spring again, Damon. And the great thing about this is there's the outside possibility that we get Tiger for 3 weeks in a row because the match is on December 10th. There are still three open slots in the Hero World Challenge that Tiger has not filled the field for the week before that. And then, of course, the week after that, the PNC Championship, which he's played with his son Charlie for the last couple of years. So yes, he may actually get Tiger overload in December.
And I'm not surprised. As you know, I got to spend some time with him at his TGR Junior Invitational. He looked great. His peace of mind seemed fantastic as well. Any part of you surprised? I mean, this could be a potentially busy winter. Does that tell you something about what we might see in the spring and summer of 2023?
I don't know that it portends to what we'll see from Tiger on the course. It does suggest to me, it ties in with the role that he and Rory McIlroy have kind of taken on over the last 6 months, because we're really talking probably the four biggest stars, with all due respect to Scottie Scheffler and Jon Rahm. We are talking about probably the four biggest stars on the PGA Tour right now who are playing this match against each other. And this is also a franchise that had previously been much more closely associated with Phil Mickelson. It's also being played the weekend of the QBE Shootout, which it won't go up against it because it is a nighttime event versus daytime golf. But that was also, of course, an event long associated with Greg Norman. So it does seem as though that weekend will draw a line under the differences that have arisen in this game and kind of move beyond that into a new era.
Well, just because of what he's done and accomplished in this game, don't you think that the cameras will be poised and the swing analysts will be looking at every, you know, swing that he makes, the way he walks, the way he moves, the way he talks, because that's how we have covered Tiger Woods throughout his career?
That's never going to change, and particularly not now, because he's coming back from this long injury recovery over the last couple of years. And we all want to see what he has, what's left in the tank, because we all want to believe that there's still another, at least one more major championship in there. And all eyes with Tiger always turn to April, Augusta. And is he going to play? How much are we going to see of him next year? The possibility that we'll see him at least twice with the PNC and the match in December, possibly a third time at the Hero World Challenge, that's really going to whet the appetite for people who are gasping for some Tiger Woods.
No doubt the eyes will be watching, as you note, including the third member of our team today, Paige McKenzie. Paige, your reaction to this news about Tiger teeing it up in December?
Yeah, I'm chomping at the bit here because we've been wanting trash talk in the match. We're excited about that aspect of it. We never, I felt like, got that fulfilled in any of the previous iterations, but perhaps between JT and Tiger Woods, we'll get a little bit of smack talk going on under the lights. No, I'm super excited to be able to see Tiger back in action. I'm excited to see alternative formats being highlighted in this time of year that's typically sleepy for the game of golf. We got a little bit of action. It's heating up right now come December.
Absolutely. A little chippiness is never a bad thing, especially in December. It's been a long wait since 2017. Russell Henley able to get it done, winning the Worldwide Technology at Mayakoba by four, his fourth PGA Tour title. First since that 2017 Cadence Bay Houston Open. Improves to 2-for-7, by the way, with the 54-hole lead or co-lead on the PGA Tour. And after the win, spoke to the media about what it meant to get the job done.
You always have doubts of if am I going to win again. You know, I've had a lot of tournaments where I haven't gotten it done. And so this one's really special, you know, to be leading by six, which is my largest 54-hole lead, I'm sure. And to just play solid today and get it done is gives me a lot of confidence. I'm really excited, really thankful. I don't know what to say. It's just surreal.
In terms of your 54-hole leads, obviously you haven't been able to convert one in a while, but you did this week, obviously. Do you feel like this was a bit of a monkey off your back scenario?
I mean, I've just choked. You know, the nerves have gotten to me, and I've made bad mistakes, bad mental mistakes, and just haven't gotten it done on Sunday. And so put myself in position a decent amount, but just haven't gotten it done. So to come out and kind of do everything pretty well today, tee to green and keep it pretty clean and just play steady was nice. And, you know, I don't think I would have done it unless I kind of failed so many times.
Russell Henley had a pretty funny quote after this as well. He said, "I don't sleep well on a lead. I need a lot more practice. I have no idea how Tiger did this 80 some times." Technically, Tiger's 80-odd wins had 59 54-hole leads, of which he converted 55. But I'm curious, Paige, there wasn't much in Russell Henley's recent form that would have suggested what we were going to see in such a dominant performance over the weekend. Were you in any way surprised by it, or do you think it was the kind of venue that he's equipped for?
Yeah, I was going to say there's two components, right? The recent form that may lead to a positive outcome, or a golf course that may suit a player. Certainly the two components that I look at. And I'll give credit to Tripp Eisenhower. At the beginning of the week, he talked about how this golf course has typically rewarded the most accurate of drivers. And that's not a common thread amongst PGA Tour venues. Rarely will you see certain venues, or a lot of the venues, excuse me, take advantage of the accuracy off of the tee. But just a little breakdown of what we have seen over the past is three past champions have been ranked inside the top 10 in driving accuracy, 8 inside the top 30. And then Russell Henley was 8th this season in driving accuracy. He was 2nd in the field this week. So certainly this particular venue, it kind of suits itself to accurate driving. This is a good example. This is a 12th hole, one of the most difficult holes for the players to hit. And you can see there is absolutely no room for error off of the fairways. I got a kick out of Steve Sands saying that Victor Hovland mentioned this was similar to Oklahoma and Carston Creek, a golf course that he was familiar with, this is the past two-time champion coming into this week. And I think that has a lot to do with it. Both in Carston Creek and in this case, there's just very little room for error off of the fairway. So yes, as it relates to how this golf course suits Russell Henley, he's historically been one of the most accurate drivers of the golf ball, has been so far this season, and certainly was this week.
Just looking at that visual we saw of Russell Henley hitting off the tee, I got the heebie-jeebies. It looked so narrow out there. But, I mean, Paige is 100% correct in terms of the penal nature of that golf course. If you're not in the fairway, you're likely in the mangrove forests out there as well. And Russell Henley's one of the shorter guys on tour. He's never broken that 300-yard barrier that everyone seems to have crested these days. He's 149th on tour right now in driving distance. But as Paige pointed out, he's 8th on tour this year. And there certainly aren't many guys straighter than Russell Henley, but he also capitalizes on it. The last three seasons on tour, he's been 2nd, 6th, and 3rd in strokes gained approach. Now, his putter has wavered radically. He hasn't been better than 105th in strokes gained putting in the last 5 years on tour, but he does have the ability to capitalize. And this is, frankly, a test that isn't presented all that often on the PGA Tour anymore, where the premium is on where you hit it rather than how far you can hit it.
A couple things jump out to me. First of all, his quote about "I choked." And if you talk to the elite athletes, it's almost like everybody admits everybody chokes. It's just who doesn't choke the most, who chokes least out there. I love that honesty. Also, when he does win on the PGA Tour, if you look at his history, he has 2 3-shot wins and now a 4-shot win, also won in a playoff. But when he is right, he can take it deep and run away from the field. And you mentioned his putting, and I'm glad you did. Throughout his career, he has set a reminder on his phone saying, on his watch, "I am the best putter in the world." And there have been times when he has been among the best putters in the world, Eamon, and you mentioned the last 5 years, but in 2013 and 2015, he was top 10 in strokes gained putting. And I think we saw some flashes of that this week in Mexico, especially with this length of putt, the six-footers and the eight-footers. And I love kind of the crawl camera, I guess you'd call it, when you see that putter head moving back and through. That's kind of level to the green. You could see the comfort that he had on the putting surfaces this week in Mexico.
And that reflects much more of what his putting was like back when he was winning on the PGA Tour in the early part of his career in 2013. When he won, he was eighth in putting in 2014. When he won, he dropped off a little, but he was still top 30 comfortably in putting as well. So it definitely has gotten a little more up and down for him over the last few years. And when you're as comparatively short as he is, and he's getting shorter, he hasn't kept up with the power game. Yeah. His last win on tour in 2017, he ranked 54th in driving distance on the tour that year. He's currently way, way below that. Yeah. Under well outside the top 100 now, 149th. So it's the game is in danger of moving past players like Russell Henley. So it's nice when you see one of those rare opportunities these days where they have the game and all of the tools to compete on a golf course like this to see somebody fully capitalize on it.
No doubt. The putter was right this week in Mexico, and much more from Paige McKenzie in just a little bit. Here's a look right now, though, at the Comcast Business Tour Top 10, and the reason that this is so important is since 2009, every player who finished in the Comcast Business Tour Top 10 has made it all the way to the Tour Championship at Eastlake. So if players finish in the Top 10, odds are they're going to make it to Atlanta, Georgia, and the Tour Championship.
Well, coming up, the USGA and the RNA today announced some changes to the rules of golf. We'll have the latest updates to the do's and don'ts of the game right after the break.
Back on Golf Today, here's what you need to know. On this Monday, the USGA and RNA have unveiled a regular update to the rules of golf as they continue to make the rules easier to understand and apply. The new rules will go into effect January 1st, 2023. The new edition continues the modernization process with an emphasis on both inclusion and sustainability. So here, overview of the key changes, modifications for players with disabilities. No penalty for no handicap on scorecard and stroke play can replace damaged club during the round if it's not damaged through abuse. Ball moved by natural forces must be replaced, no penalty, and simplified back on the line relief. With more, we welcome Craig Winter, USGA Senior Director of Rules of Golf and Amateur Status. Craig, thanks for the time. What do golfers need to know about this update, which goes into effect on January 1st?
Well, Damon, first of all, thank you for having me on. I think the headline for this, you saw it right at the top, it's the modifications for players with disabilities. We had a wonderful event down in Pinehurst, a championship that is, the U.S. Adaptive Open, and it really raised awareness for the adaptive golf community. There's an impact that's going to happen with this revision to the rules of golf. It's going to be subtler, but maybe actually in the end, it'll have more of an effect. Rule 25 is now a rule of golf. Any players that need these modifications, they no longer require the committee to put them into effect. You open up a book, you look at the mobile app, and you see the rules. You're going to see the modified rules right there. And it's a really big step forward for us on inclusion and certainly for awareness for this community and how great they can play this game.
Now, Craig, this is one of several areas in which you've announced changes and updates to the rules of golf. How did you zero in with the RNA on these particular areas as requiring simplification?
Yeah, I mean, this is really a continuation, as we said, with what happened in 2019. We rewrote the entire rule book. That was a massive project. We really just took a step back and said, what's working? Well, frankly, most of it's working. And we really just targeted those things. You know, we are always open to listening. We get a lot of feedback, trying to look at what was confusing to players and see if we could continue that message of how can we make the rules easier to understand and apply. And the few changes that we see, there's five key changes in this revision. Those are really focused on that message. How can we continue to make these rules easier to understand and apply?
Speaking of continuing to simplify the rules here, how much headroom is there left for further simplification? What other areas are you and the RNA looking at this point?
Yeah, I mean, we really don't know where we're going to go. We move with the game of golf. That was the whole goal in 2019, to modernize to the modern game. We've tweaked a little bit. There are a few big changes, but generally speaking, we're extremely happy with where the rules are. And we'll see where we go in 2027, which would be the next rule cycle. At this point, we're not really sure.
Craig, inclusivity and sustainability, those are two big words, big themes. But why are they so important to the USGA?
Well, obviously, inclusivity, as I just spoke to with the U.S. Adaptive Open, including the adaptive community in the game of golf, you need to make sure that the rules fit that community as well and that they're forefront. So Rule 25 brings that to us. Sustainability. Now, we're obviously in the Distance Insights project. We have our green section that looks at water reduction and ultimately the footprint of golf. We're there as well now with the rules of golf. We've decided that our mobile app is going to be the primary vehicle for individuals, golfers, that is, to get the rules of golf. We've had this have a rule book in your bag. Every single golfer should have a rule book. We're actually moving away from that message. The books now, they're for golf administrators, for rules officials. The mobile app is great. It lets you search. You can find, even if you're not sure what you're looking for, you're probably going to find the answer. So we really encourage golfers to use the digital versions. It's over 2 million books that we won't be printing, distributing, over half a billion pages that aren't going to be out there. So that's a really strong sustainability message that we're proud of.
Craig, you mentioned the U.S. Adaptive Open at Pinehurst. I was moved by the event. Are you surprised at the impact that the event had in its first playing?
Well, we were hoping it would have a big impact. It certainly has, both to that community and to everybody's awareness of it. So it's something, obviously, we're going to continue to do. You can see right there, it looks to be that it's Dennis Walters, I believe, obviously tapping in. It was extraordinary for everybody that was present, for those that saw it on TV. We're hoping that there will be more adaptive golf present on golf courses all around the U.S. based on just awareness that this rule exists and these golfers are out there and they're looking to lower the hurdles to get on golf courses.
Craig, I'm curious, at what point did the rules of golf become as convoluted as they are now? And you mentioned the next cycle in 2027. Is there a case to be made for simplifying the rules on a faster basis than the every 4 years that you and the RNA have established?
Yeah, I mean, good question. And we talk about that at every cycle. Are we doing this at the right pace? Golf is unique in that we have one set of rules and it covers the game worldwide. There may be other sports that move more quickly than what you could see with respect to golf. We make change when we feel like we need to, and updating an entire set of rules, that affects the millions of golfers all around the world. There's education that's built into that. There's translations that are built into that. We feel the four-year cycle, it still works very well for the game of golf, for the entire industry. But when we do need to make change, just like we saw throughout the entire 2019 cycle, we'll do that. And that very particular pointed changes when they make sense. But the entire code, the entire set of rules, 4 years is a good cycle for us to be able to roll out through the entire game and all that play.
Craig, how about the ball being moved by natural forces? No penalty going forward. Would we call that the Ricky Fowler rule? Is that specifically a rule because of what happened to Ricky in Phoenix a couple years ago?
Well, it's certainly fair to look at Ricky and his situation here as we see this. This is a very, it's going to be a rare situation, but it's a really good outcome in this change. We've been talking about this for a while. Obviously, what happened to Ricky, it was particularly pointed that he was in the lead. How this new exception works starting in January, you see Ricky has completed his relief procedure, his ball's in play, and it's at rest. If it then moves due to natural forces, unless it rolls into another area of the course, like you see there in the penalty area, you're always going to play it as it lies. But in those really rare cases when something like this happens, we're going to make sure that the player puts the ball back. There's no penalty. We're not putting salt in the wound. He's already taken the penalty. Let's just get the ball back on that spot, and he can play it without any additional penalty.
I imagine Ricky's happy with this update. I'm all for modernization and simplification as well. Craig, thank you so much for this time on this Monday.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Craig Winter, yeah. With the USGA, what do you think about these updates?
I'm in favor of simplifying everything. There's a reason why, pickleball is the fastest growing sport in the United States. It's because the rules could be written on the palm of your hand. It's very simple, whereas the rules of golf and then the decisions on the rules of golf over the years have become so convoluted. I've never bought the argument that you'll hear that the rules are dissuasive to people joining the game, because, frankly, I don't think most recreational golfers are real sticklers for the rule book. Anyway, and the rules we see today, while it's great to see simplification, probably don't apply on a day-to-day basis to most recreational golfers. But the more they can be simplified, the better it is, because it gets golf away from the perception of being a little bit too rule book heavy and a little bit too stuffy.
I'm most excited about the update in terms of the golfers who face challenges. There are some 5.7 million golfers who face unique challenges to play this game. There are 11.3 million golfers who are lapsed golfers who no longer play because of a difficulty or a challenge they face. Anything that makes the game easier for players and people with challenges, whether it's an adjustment to the tee boxes or whether how the golf course is laid out or how the clubhouse is laid out in terms of wheelchair access, et cetera. That's a very important aspect, I believe, to growing this game and allowing people who want to play an easier time to do so.
And it really does prove that the barriers to this game, they're physical, but they're also matters of perception as well. And certainly the inclusivity around the disability rule, I think, covers the physical impediment to playing golf. The perception is the rest of the entire rule book, and the frequency with which it seems to be brought out and wagged at somebody that they're somehow violating rules that are a little esoteric and Byzantine and they don't really know what they are. That's a perception that exists in golf. This is a process the RNA and the USGA began a number of years ago. The further they can pare down the rule book to essentially just what matters.
Maybe writing it on the hand one day?
That's anything that could just be on a little card where you don't need the rule book to you know, guide your way through 18 holes. That's supposed to be fun. And for most, it is. But I think it's fun because most people aren't as much sticklers for the rules as some.
No doubt. As Craig said, a big day for the USGA. Coming up on Golf Today, we witnessed a Scott breakthrough on the LPGA Tour for her first win since 2011. Gemma Dreiberg became the 11th first-time winner of the season. You won't want to miss her emotional interview. And as the LPGA Tour heads to Pelican Golf Club this week, we're catching up with the man who oversaw the restoration of the Donald Ross course that the best women in the world will face. Golf course architect Bo Welling joins next. A few years ago, Hale Irwin gave his thoughts on Langer and his place in the game.
I think Bernard's probably, in my estimation, perhaps the best senior player to ever play the game. What he's done through the years and how he continues to play. I felt like perhaps I could have played a little longer, but I wanted to enjoy what I had, and so I kind of lost that edge. But Bernard has kept that up.
Time now for some Bernhard Langer appreciation. So let's just keep it simple. What do you appreciate most about Bernhard Langer?
Just watching his grandchild run onto the green there made me wonder, are we going to see him run have great-grandchildren?
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past him.
You could understand it if parts of him had been replaced over the years, if it was a bionic Bernie situation, but it's simply not. I mean, it's an undiluted love of the game that keeps Bernhard Langer in it. And it's hard to overstate just how good his longevity is. I mean, he turned pro 50 years ago, and it's been quite a career that he's actually racked up at this point, because his first career victory came all the way back in 1975. He's had over 100 professional victories in his career, including the Masters in 1985 and 1993. And that 44 wins on the PGA Tour Champions, he's also been second 40 times. So he is by far and away the best senior tour golfer in the history of the game. He's won $33 million on the PGA Tour Champions versus $11 million in his regular tour career. So the longevity of Bernhard Langer, to me, is even more impressive than the actual wins, is the fact that he is still highly competitive 50 years after he turned professional.
Yeah, I've been all over the map as to whether I think he will catch and pass Hale Irwin, and I think the answer now is yes. He's just got one more to get it done. He's 65 years of age, and you're right, and I love that you use the word love, because you have to love this game to play as long as he has. You talk about the major championship debut as an 18-year-old in 1976. Gene Sarazen was in that field.
Born in 1902, and Langer then competed in the Masters against Abel Gallegos, who is an 18-year-old in the field who had been born 100 years after Gene Sarazen. So the span of people that Bernhard Langer has competed against, it's just an astonishing career that he's built up at this point. And he doesn't seem any closer to calling it a day than he ever did.
The love of work is what impresses me the most, that he will arrive to a golf course usually earlier in the week than just about anybody in the field. And it's off to the golf course he goes to chart the golf course with his caddy, to come up with a game plan. You know, 15 years into your PGA Tour Champions career, and he's still acting like, you know, he's a 50-year-old out there and beating the youngsters, you know, the youngsters like Stephen Alker and Jim Furyk and Jerry Kelly. I mean, these are men 10, 15 years younger than he is. And I just get the sense that, you know, Lord willing and the creek don't rise, and he continues to have good health, and he does a lot of stretching and a lot of things to stay young and limber. But my goodness, he's won twice this season. Why couldn't he win one or two more?
And that work ethic has never changed, literally from the very first day. He made his debut on the DP World Tour in Europe in 1974 in the German Open. He shot 87 as a 16-year-old. He came back the next day and was 10 shots better. He seems as though he's been improving every day since then. But the work ethic is really is what defines Bernhard Langer. And would anyone really be surprised if Bernhard Langer doesn't get over 50 PGA Tour Champions wins? I mean, it's not as though he's only now pouncing once in a while on the PGA Tour Champions. He's contending frequently. The competition is younger, longer, faster, but he's still there.
And it'd be one thing if it was a straight line. He's overcome short game woes and putting
five times
issues. It's remarkable. In 91 at the Ryder Cup, missing that short putt, he goes on and wins his very next start. Speaks to the stomach and the toughness that he has as well.
There's a lot in the current generation could benefit from having both the work ethic and the intestinal fortitude that Langer has shown over the years.
No doubt. Congrats on win number 44 for Bernhard Langer. Before we go to break, here's a look at the Charles Schwab Cup points list as the senior circuit prepares for their season-ending event this week, the Charles Schwab Cup Championship at Phoenix Country Club. Back in a bit. Time now, Paige, for Winning Moments presented by Wynn Grips. This is Russell Henley's Winning Moment for Pop. Oh, gotta love it. Waited for a long time. 2017 was his previous win in Houston. Now a four-time winner on the PGA Tour, Russell Henley. Final round, 74-shot victory, finishing at 23 under par. Now, you see the name Colin Morikawa there, finished 15th in the notables in Mayakoba. And it's been an interesting, you know, season for Colin Morikawa. You know, started working with a putting coach for the first time in his career, as noted by Eamon Lynch in Golf Week. Started working with Stephen Sweeney, confirmed the move Sunday at the Worldwide Technology Championship at Mayakoba after a final round 67. So time for a little something or nothing. Eamon, Colin Morikawa for the first time in his career using a putting coach.
To me, it's definitely something. You know, he gets a something of an unfair rap because you can't say Colin Morikawa is a bad putter. He's won five times on tour. He's won two major championships. But the year-end statistics tend to be resolutely unflattering to him. He's never been better than 128th in strokes gained putting on the PGA Tour. And I think he had kind of a low point at the CJ Cup a few weeks ago. In a 78-man field, he ranked 77th in strokes gained putting. So he was flying from Congaree to Jupiter for a tailor-made commercial shoot with Aaron Wise, who was checking his putting stats during the flight. They began talking about it, and Aaron Wise has turned around his putting with Stephen Sweeney, who also works with Shane Lowry and with Sebastian Munoz, Joaquin Neiman, Carlos Ortiz, quite a roster of clients he has. And he ultimately then texted Stephen Sweeney the weekend before Mayakoba, and they worked together Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I talked to Stephen Sweeney on Saturday, and he said it was very much about trying to establish a baseline, that Colin Morikawa was very much a feel putter, which probably explains why he's changed his actual putter several times this year, including at the President's Cup. But Stephen Sweeney said that Colin wouldn't know why he got hot with a putter, nor would he know why he was cold with a putter. So that their goal initially now is to establish a baseline, to build up structure around the practice and the technique, so that then he can establish where he is in relation to that baseline going forward.
Leave some breadcrumbs in the case he does get trouble. He knows a way back, Paige. What do you think? Is this a case of a Vijay Singh, Alexi Thompson, ball striking so superior and the putter just a little bit wonky from time to time?
Well, I think that that's an accurate statement. I, though, would gain hope in the fact that this appears to be one of the only times that he's really sought professional help to get over that hump. And I think Eamon brought up a good point, and Sweeney and Colin, in what they're doing, is really finding out why. And I think it's the tendency for a lot of field players to always fall back into that. I'm a field player. I don't need to know. I don't want to know because I'm afraid it will then overtake the feel, that I will become too mechanical and lose what is an asset of his in the game of golf. So I think, though, at a certain level and at a certain point in your career, you do need to understand and know the whys and the answers to those questions to help guide and give those bumpers like a bowling alley to keep you headed in the right direction. Just in that montage of photos, we saw two different putting grips and at least two different putters. So there has been a process of searching over the last several years. So this is not new. I just think it's the next step, and I think it's probably the most appropriate step to getting better and finding a new plateau for Colin Morikawa. I mean, everything else is so easy to point to is the positive points in his game. I remember doing a full screen graphic a couple years ago where his best putting performances not just resulted in good finishes, but resulted in wins. He knows what he has to work on, and this seems to be the next step in that process.
Yeah, he has looked like a generational talent already in his young career, but in addition to scrutiny of his putting, there was a bit of a misunderstanding on Saturday in an interview between Todd Lewis and Colin. Let's take a listen.
You know, Trevor Immelman mentioned during the broadcast as we were watching you play that you came out and played so well early in your career that possibly that was your bar, your standard. Did you go through that?
Wow, that's hard to hear from him. To be honest, I could care less what he says there because I don't think that's my bar. I mean, I think I've got so much more to improve. I mean, I've been near last on putting, and, you know, I don't think I've even finished close to being average on putting. And if I just get my putting to be average, I think there's so much more to improve. So I don't know. I don't know where that came from, but that kind of stings there. I don't like to hear that.
Well, you meant it as a compliment. Did you play it so well?
I don't know if that was a compliment. I'll be honest. I mean, if he did, maybe it came off wrong from what I heard, but you know, for me, I've never seen a ceiling. You know, I just want to keep improving. And obviously, we took a couple steps back this year. But, you know, it's just trying to get better every day and trying to improve on little things. And, I expect myself to play well. I set really high goals for myself. And, you know, it just sucks when they don't come through.
The 2008 Masters champ and the International President's Cup captain, Trevor Immelman, wanted to clarify things on Twitter. Complete misunderstanding. Spoke to Colin on the phone last night and in person on the range this morning. All good. Paige McKenzie, what do you make of this little bit of a misunderstanding?
Well, I think that's all it was. I tend to agree with what Trevor was trying to communicate, which is when you have such a prodigious ball striker, that it really all it does take is a couple of good weeks putting. And I think all he was saying is those couple of good weeks resulted in incredible performances. And I think that gives Colin, or at least anybody that follows Colin, hope that that will continue to repeat itself. The difference between bar and ceiling may have been what was misinterpreted in this exchange. But for Colin Morikawa moving forward, I tend to have a bias, and I think most people that follow the game have a bias towards the best ball strikers. They say they're the best golfers, they just need a good week or two with the putting, versus the flip side, which you could say the same thing about a putter, but I think the ball striking is the biggest and hardest component to master, and he already has mastered that throughout his career. He's shown us those high watermarks on his ball striking, and it's just about finding the next incremental improvement, which appears to be on the putting green.
Yeah, I mean, I was interesting to hear how Colin interpreted that question, maybe as Paige said, the bar versus ceiling, what was meant in the comment. I thought that Trevor was just being complimentary about how hot Colin Morikawa started his career and how tough it is for anyone, or Jordan Spieth, for example, to maintain that pace at the beginning of a career.
Yeah, Trevor was not only being complimentary, he was being accurate as well, because he did set an extraordinarily high bar when he wins two majors in his first couple of years as a professional. I think Colin's reaction suggests a little sensitivity around perhaps his performance this year. You know, he's played 20 events in the PGA Tour worldwide in 2022, and his best finish was a tie for second at the Genesis way back in February. And since then, he was number two in the world after the Masters. He's currently number nine. So there's probably a little sensitivity in there, but at least with the hiring of Stephen Sweeney, what it shows you is that Colin Morikawa, unlike a lot of other players, he's willing to publicly acknowledge what the weaknesses are, what the obvious weaknesses are, and then set about trying to eliminate those weaknesses. But part misunderstanding, part a little bit excessive sensitivity on Colin's part, I would think.
And with that sensitivity, as you call it, I think it also speaks to his expectations and what he expects out of himself and his game, and that he doesn't want, you know, it to be viewed as an anomaly that he won the Open the first time he ever, you know, saw a course over in the UK, and that he follows the next year, you know, or the previous year by winning his TPC Harding Park in his backyard from where he went to college. I think he is saying, this is the player I expect to be. I expect to be a major champ year after year after year. And I think Jordan Spieth, I imagine, is built in a very similar way. And that's a hard, hard pace to maintain.
It is, but, you know, it's not even Jordan Spieth. You go Rory McIlroy as well, perhaps even our next guest, Lydia Ko, is when you set a bar very high early in your career, it's what you're going to expect. You're not going to play for a living unless that's the bar you're going to set for yourself and you expect to exceed those goals year after year. But the number of people in the history of this game who've maintained that pace is remarkably small.
Yeah, yeah.
And particularly in the modern era of this game, you're essentially talking about one guy who's managed to do that over the last half century, really, in this sport. And that's an awfully high bar to be judged against. And, you know, it does distort the perception of what a player ought to do year in and year out. Morikawa had set an extraordinarily high standard with those two major championship performances and three other PGA Tour wins in there. And he did that with the same glaring weakness in his game with putting that he's attempting to address now, to get less streaky, to be more structured in it. Because it's very obvious, as it was with Rory McIlroy, that when the putter is not only tolerable or middle of the pack, but when it's good, which it has been with both of them, because Colin Morikawa has putted well on every surface these guys play on, so he can putt well, then the rest of the game is almost always there to deliver on it. And I think Immelman's point was accurate in the sense that a bar has been set.
Yeah.
He's not at that bar at the moment. I wouldn't interpret bar as meaning ceiling. Though.
I agree. It can be very tough to climb the mountain. It can be lonely up there, and it's very tough as well. Someone who's all about climbing the mountain, of course, is Lydia Ko. She's a major champ, a winner twice this year on the LPGA Tour. One of the game's biggest names and talents will join the show next. You won't want to miss it.
Welcome back to Golf Today. The fall part of the season is a time of rest for a lot of pros, but not over on the Korn Ferry Tour, where it's much more stressful for those battling through qualifying school. And here's how the qualifying tournament works. There are four stages to the Korn Ferry Tour qualifying school that provides access onto the Korn Ferry Tour. Pre-qualification, first, second, and what we're finishing up today, the final stage. Everyone who's here has some conditional status on the Korn Ferry Tour, but a card for elite status, guaranteed starts, comes with a top 40 finish in the final qualifying tournament today, which is wrapping up. And starting next year, the top five finishers on this day will earn PGA Tour status for the following season.
For more, let's turn to Brently Romine from the landings in Savannah. Buddy, it's always good to see you. How would you describe what is at stake today?
Yeah, Damon, this is one of the most stressful weeks of the year. I think people would argue that the second stage is just a little bit more stressful, considering that every player here this week in Savannah has at least some conditional Korn Ferry Tour status, regardless of their finish. And it's important. We talk so much about the top 40 in ties, getting those guaranteed starts. That's big, but if you don't finish in that top 40, your place matters, because we've seen in the past, last year there were 11 guys who finished in the top 25 of the KFT regular season points list who were here at final stage a year ago, and three of them, MJ Duffy, Austin Ekro, and Phillip Knowles, finished outside the top 40. So still a chance for those guys who don't get inside that magic number, but there's a lot of golf to be played. It's pretty exciting out there right now.
Brently, the 54-hole leader, Chan Kim, had a four-stroke lead heading into the final round. We just saw now that he's won back of Chris Goddard. What should we know about him?
Yeah, Eamon, this guy is a seasoned veteran. I think people who have paid attention to the majors the last decade or so have heard his name. He's made 12 major starts, played just one season of college golf at ASU, but has been bounced around all over the place. Back in 2012, actually played nine stages of Q schools between the PGA Tour over in Europe and in Asia. He was the Asian Tour Q school medalist that year. as well. But he was talking about how the last few years he was trying to get onto the PGA Tour via the world rankings. He won 7 times on the Japan Tour. Back in 2019, he reached as high as 61st, and now he's 181. And so Q School is the only option for him right now. He's got a great fallback. But I asked him, if you were to win medalist today, where would that rank? He said it would be top three behind Order of Merit on the Japan Tour. Obviously, medalist at Q School would be one of them. And then the third is playing with Tiger Woods at the 2020 Zozo. In the third round, he was talking about how he hit a stinger off the tee, and Tiger goes, that was pretty sweet. So coming from Tiger, who's the king of stingers, that's the highest compliment that someone could receive.
How about the king of the long ball, Chris Goddard, reigning collegiate player of the year, muscular, has his sights set on fully exempt next season. Tell us about his rise to this point.
Yeah, the guy absolutely mashes it, right, Damon? He hits the ball a mile. But let's go back a year and a half ago, and Chris Goddard was looking to transfer from Rutgers for his fifth year, and he talked about how this opportunity today was an opportunity that he never thought was possible back then, but he ends up at Oklahoma, player of the year in college golf, and finishes T4 at the John Deere this summer to get into the Korn Ferry Tour Finals, which in turn got him in to this week. And it was interesting because he talked about those two short miss putts he missed last May at the NCAA Championship, 3 feet on 17, 6 feet on 18. And that cost him not only potentially the NCAA individual title, but also his Korn Ferry Tour card, because he did not finish in the top five of the PGA Tour University ranking. But he said, that may have been the best thing for me because it kept that chip on his shoulder, which we know he plays his best when his back is against the wall. And, I mean, he's proven it now that he's got the game to compete with maybe not the best players in the world, but, you know, some of these guys who are really hungry to get on the PGA Tour someday.
Brentley, there are a lot of familiar names out there, guys like Sam Saunders, Cole Hammer, Spencer Levine, Parker Coody. Who are some of the other notables in line for guaranteed starts that you're watching today?
Yeah, so we just saw one of them finish up just a few moments ago, and that's Willie Mack III. Ryan Lavner, of course, last year wrote a great story about him. But Willie's story is well-documented, right? He's a mini-tour legend, APGA Player of the Year a year ago, but really had, you know, kind of a hard journey through the professional golf ranks, lived in his car for a little bit of time. His car then caught on fire, had to save his golf clubs back in 2018, but goes out and shoots 566 today. So he's going to be in line for 8 guaranteed starts. And then another third, Frankie Sapp in the third. He's currently out there playing right now, also in that position to potentially crack the top 10 in ties and get those 12 guaranteed starts. Frankie actually started way back at pre-qualifying. So that's kind of rare. We only see a handful of guys each year who play all 4 stages of Q School, and his mom's on the bag as well. So that's pretty cool. And then just looking down at that cut line, players like Charles Wong, who I wrote the story yesterday, has a severe cut on his finger. So he is laboring through his round. Manav Shah, who gave up being a doctor to chase professional golf, played at Damon's favorite school, UCLA. Also, little known fact about Shah, from Bakersfield Country Club. Bakersfield Country Club was actually the host of the very first Korn Ferry Tour event back when it was called the Ben Hogan Tour way back in 1990. I was actually born that year. And then I can't forget my guy, Wilson Furr, probably the second most famous Furr brother, is 15-year-old brother Prentice, is a music star, signed with the record label. And his biggest hit right now is October. That's a song that helped him get discovered. And I think if Wilson goes out today and grabs guaranteed starts, it's not October anymore. It's November 7th. But the Furr family is proving that, you know, fall is a big time of the year for them.
More nuggets on Korn Ferry Tour Q School coming up at 4 p.m. Eastern time on Golf Central. Brentley, feel better. And thank you so much for the time, pal.
I'm trying. Flu game.
That's right. Bringing his best. All right, folks, stay with us. We're counting down the 9 best shots of the week when Golf Today returns. Seeing some great things around the world of golf. That's coming up next on Golf Today. Back on Golf Today, let's look back at Lydia Ko's season, how she got to the top in January, added win number 17 to her stellar resume, picked up the title at the Gainbridge LPGA. With the win, became the first LPGA player since Nancy Lopez to win 17 times for the age of 25. And then, of course, the BMW Ladies Championship last month secured win number 18 in South Korea. Birdie three of the last four. Final round 65 to win by four. With the win, now sits in 30th in the LPGA all-time career wins list. And this season's been fantastic for the player known as Lids. Couple of wins, 13 top 10 finishes, ranked second on the LPGA, and three top 10 finishes in majors. Her best finish, the T3 at the Amundi Evian Championship, which she has won. We're joined by Lydia now. Lydia, it's great to see you. Listen, to win in Korea must have been an experience hard to describe, but you did so beautifully in words and tears. How soulful and full circle was that win compared to others for you?
Yeah, I think going into the week, I was talking to my sister and my team and said, I would love to win in Korea at least once before my career is over. And you know, just because it's a place that you know, I was born and I have so many family members there, it was going to be a very like special moment, whether it came like this year or at one point. I just wanted it to come. And I think when I won, I could feel the emotions and tears coming up. But the champagne celebration held that back a little bit. But afterwards, you know, doing the interview, I realized how meaningful it was for me. And to have so many of my family members there as well, it just, it was a special win. And I think something that I'll never forget. And I hope it was as special as it was for my family as it was for me.
Lydia, we've seen how good your season has been, even beyond the two wins and how solid it's been. And you said recently that you're playing some of the best, most consistent golf of your career. That's a pretty high bar, given what you've done in your career. How do you feel as though you're a more complete player now than you were when you first started out on tour?
Yeah, I think, you know, my career has had its own up and downs. I think, you know, through the times when I wasn't playing as well, I was able to learn so much from that and not get too caught up on the bads now than really when I was, you know, playing at my best. But yeah, I think every experience just makes you grow and you're able to learn from that and know that for the future. And I do think this might be one of the, you know, the best period of golf that I've played. Yes, I won more in 2015 and 2016, but in general, you know, I've been a little bit more in contention, and I think the more times I put myself there, I'm going to be more comfortable, you know, being in the lead and, you know, being in those final few groups, and hopefully have more fun trophy-holding championship summits.
You've mentioned this kind of roller coaster that your career has been on, with some slumps, some highs. A couple of years ago, when you first started working with Sean Foley, you were in one of those slumps. You were outside the top 50 in the world rankings. Now you're number three in the world. What did Sean Foley bring to your game over the last couple of years that you had worked together?
Yeah, I think at that period of time, I was, yes, obviously looking for some assistance in not just my golf swing, but also, you know, clear some of the questions and doubts in my own head. And, you know, Sean has been, you know, more than just a golf swing coach. You know, he was able to mentor me, and, you know, we talk sometimes about non-golf related things. And he's able to just, like, in golf, like, for me to have a better understanding of my game and know that, you know, sometimes the coach or the team's not going to be there. And I think through him, I just know myself better and know what some of my tendencies are. And I think that's super important going down the road, because it just helps me to grow and like become more whole player than to somebody that like relies on you know, their team being there to help guide me. So yeah, Sean is such a special person, and not only in my golf, but you know, outside of that. And he will forever be a great mentor for me, and you know, I can't thank Sean enough for his time and support.
Lydia, I texted Sean the other day about you, and he said, I can't list how many ways I'm proud of Lydia, watching her find herself as a person has been the most special. And then he said, greatness is about what you do after you lose your way. How did you find your way back?
I think the people around me really helped me to kind of find this moment again. I know that through the ups and downs. I wouldn't be here today without, you know, my team and my family. Sean was obviously a huge help in, like, just help guiding me and believing in me, even when I didn't believe in myself. I think, you know, I had a lot of doubts in my head. I wondered if it was ever going to happen again. And then just winning in Hawaii last year was like an assurance to myself that, hey, I can be back in the winner's circle. But I think golf, it's like, it depends a lot on rhythm and momentum. And I feel like if you find the right feel and the right momentum, you're able to carry on from that. And I feel like I've been able to do that better. And I think that's why I've been able to play a little bit more consistently. But that's not to say I don't think I'm even close to being perfect yet. I think there's still so many aspects in my game that needs to be improved. But I just feel like I'm at a happy place, an exciting place in my life right now, and I think that has helped me on the golf course as well.
Lydia, we could fill this show talking about all the records you've set over the years, despite the fact that you are still only 25 years old. You know, you've won majors, you've been world number one, you've won player of the year and may do so again this year. Do you have specific goals left that you have not yet accomplished in the game?
Yeah, I would love to. One of my big career goals was the career Grand Slam, and being in the Hall of Fame would be really awesome too, because there are names there that, you know, they're legendary, and what they've done for the game is really incredible. So if I could be part of that, that would be definitely like a dream come true. But for me, I just try and, you know, focus on the small goals, which were, you know, increasing my fairway set percentage and I'm increasing my greens and regulation percentage as well. And I feel like when those aspects are better, I think the results and everything is going to continue. And as we all know with golf, one day you feel like you got everything, and the next day you're not really sure, you know, what those feels were anymore. So it keeps us humble, and I think it keeps me motivated to keep playing and to know that no matter what ranked player I am, there's always things that I can improve on, and I'm going to focus on those aspects.
To that point, Lydia, I know on Instagram you said you're moving away from Sean Foley because of logistics, and I know that you've worked some off and on with Ted O, but how much do you feel like you own your swing now and coaches are more for maintenance as opposed to philosophical changes?
Yeah, I think I've learned more about my tendencies. Know that when that time of the month comes around, these are the aspects that, you know, happen to, you know, my body, and that leads to this, and this in my golf swing. Or when I'm fatigued, this is what happens. Or when I'm nervous, this is what happens. So I don't have it all sorted out. That's why we do all need that little bit of guidance. But I do feel like I have a better understanding of my game, and, you know, what are the things that I always need to keep an eye out for. And I think that has just helped me to keep it a lot more simple, that when I'm hitting it left, okay, this is probably it, or if I'm hitting this. So it just keeps it very simple, and I feel like I'm not working on a bunch of things, and I'm just out there playing freely and trying to shoot the best score I can, because at the end of the day, that's what counts, and it doesn't matter if I have the most perfect swing or the most perfect-looking stroke. It's just about shooting the best score with how I'm playing at that time.
Lydia, being a child prodigy in the spotlight can't be easy, but you've done so with a lot of grace amidst occasional criticism. You never lash out. How have you kept your positivity and your love of the game?
I think my family and friends and team have definitely helped me, and I think when I wasn't playing as great a few years ago, I got really negative and how I viewed myself. And I think I lost the love of the game. But right now I feel like I love it and enjoy it as much as ever. And I'm, you know, when I am practicing, it gets me excited, and I want to work on the things that I have been working on, because, you know, then I know that it will be a little bit less stressful on the golf course. But I think just the people around me have helped me go through it. And I know that if I was walking this road by myself, I wouldn't be the person I am today. So I've got a lot to thank them for than give credit to myself.
Eddie, we know you're getting married soon, and you did once say years ago that you would retire at 30. Say it ain't so. Are you going to keep playing?
Yeah, I'm gonna play next year. People will still see me. I'm planning to be out at the first event at my home club at Lake Nona. But yeah, it's just it's an exciting time in my life right now. I'm a very special person that understands my lifestyle, and he's been my number one supporter, as I've been trying to be his number one supporter as well. But yeah, it's just I'm very excited, and I think he has made me love golf more, made me become more grateful and happy for in my life. And I'm excited for things ahead. And these are my last couple events as a miss, and soon I'll be playing a misses. But you will definitely still see Lydia Ko, and hopefully near the top of the leaderboard next year as well.
I have no doubt. It's been so fun watching you play golf over this last decade, Lydia. Thank you so much for the time. Congratulations on everything going on and off the course, and good luck this week at the Pelican.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.